live from our nation's capital.
This budget thing is going to do nothing. Space Force, I still think it's interesting. President Trump not playing his cards yet. Headlines, policy, and politics colliding.
Sound On with Kevin Cirilli. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
I would rather see a congressional solution. It's part of my DNA.
The Senate map in 2020 looks a lot different than it looked in 2018.
You really have a divide within Team Trump.
The president has to do exactly what people sent him here to do, which is to get it done.
This is Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg Radio.
Happy hump day, folks. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Bloomberg News Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. Special guest today, Donald Trump Jr. He's on the line. Don, thanks for calling in. I want to get your take. I mean, it's been Mueller week all week, day three. How are Republicans reacting to this, and what do you make of the Democratic response in terms of them advocating for the full release of the Mueller report?
Well, listen, I think the full release is one thing, but the ones that are still going on there pretending like this thing was a real thing and wasn't a total farce to begin with is pretty shocking, although not surprising. I mean, you know, whether it was mainstream media or so many of the Democrats just taking this and running with it because they could get away with saying it, when in fact there was no real basis for it, is pretty amazing. But again, not shocking in what's going on and what we've seen over the last 2 years.
Donald Trump Jr. is joining us on the line. Don, you know, this was a 22-month investigation, more than 2,900 subpoenas, report after report that came out, whether it was meetings in Trump Tower. I mean, the insinuations that there would have been indictments and whatnot. Take me to the moment when this broke on Friday that there would be no indictments, and then on Sunday afternoon, what was the response like inside of your family and inside of the president's inner circle?
Well, you know, listen, obviously we were happy, and there's some relief there, but the reality is, Kevin, I was in, you know, the meetings in question as it pertained to all of my stuff, so I knew we didn't do anything wrong. But just because something's nonsense doesn't mean you don't still have to deal with nonsense, and you don't have to deal with, you know, half of the country and leading congressional candidates and people for president saying you're being treasonous and all of this nonsense. And you see the attacks on social media, and, you know, you'll be visiting your kids in an orange jumpsuit. It was so insane and over the top. The reality is, for me, is I knew we didn't do anything wrong, so it was a matter of playing it out. Now, the fact that it got that far and that it started under the as shady as it gets circumstances, you know, the dossier being funded by the DNC and the Hillary camp, the Fusion GPS meeting with the people from the Russia meeting before and after. I mean, I took a meeting unsolicited from a guy I had done some business and looked at a deal years prior to. You know, that's how business happens. That's what you do. But when the Hillary Clinton campaign goes and pays foreign operatives to start trying to dig up false information, spreads it amongst the FBI, uses that to get FISA warrants, that's totally acceptable. But the unsolicited, that's totally acceptable. But the unsolicited meeting, taking one, that's a total disaster, and it's treasonous. It's insanity, Kevin. And, you know, I think the media did themselves a major disservice. I mean, they've done irreparable damage to their reputations. And, you know, they've been seen by so many of the people in middle America as nothing more than the marketing wing of the Democratic Party. And honestly, after these 2 years, how can you argue that? I mean, there's still people on air pretending like this thing is real. I mean, then you have the tinfoil hat brigade in Congress, whether it's, you know, Eric Swalwell or Adam Schiff. I mean, Eric Swalwell last night still pretending that the dossier was real. At least Martha McCollum finally was like, are you serious? Like, you know, they're running with this because they've been able to get away totally unchecked. They can say whatever they want. Adam Schiff can say he's seen evidence every day on TV for 2 years. He's seen it. He knows it's happening. Where is it? That'd be great. Like, show it to us.
That's
different. I mean, it's pretty insane what's happened, Kevin. This is Banana Republic stuff, and it happened in this country. It's scary.
Donald Trump Jr. joining us on the phone. We're talking about the fallout from the Mueller conclusion of the Mueller report. Attorney General Barr saying that the Mueller report found no conspiracy, no collusion. Now the talk today up on Capitol Hill, I was struck by this. Congressman Mark Meadows, Republican founding member of the Freedom Caucus, he says that, as well as Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, Don, they say that they are fully prepared to get some type of investigation into the Mueller investigation. Are you on board with that? Is that something that has to be done, or do you think that the American people want to put this chapter behind them?
Well, listen, I think for the future, the American people have to know how this happened to prevent it from ever happening again to another president. What was allowed to go on, by the DNC and, the left-wing media was a disgrace. And I think they got to get to the bottom of it because it should never happen in this country again. I mean, it's a stain on our republic. It's a stain on any kind of democracy. And that shouldn't happen again. So I do believe we need to get to the bottom of it to prevent it from happening again. Now, I'd also like, finally, for the Democrats to perhaps work with the Republicans. Despite what you hear about, despite 93% negative media coverage, despite all of that, you know what? Look at the economy. Look at the numbers. Look at what's going on in the world. It's hard to argue that it hasn't been a total success. You have all-time low Hispanic unemployment, all-time low African-American unemployment. Okay, you have your 401ks are through the roof. Manufacturing's coming back into this country. 3.1% GDP growth. I remember not too long ago when they said that couldn't be done. This 1.8, that's the new normal. These policies are working. I'd love to see the Democrats, break from the dogma and join up and maybe get some infrastructure done, fix some problems that still need to be fixed and taken care of, because my father's track record is pretty darn good. Imagine what he could accomplish without this cloud. And so I'd love to see some bipartisanship. I don't see it. I mean, I see them pushing the Green New Deal. It's only $93 trillion, Kevin. It's a phenomenal investment given that the U.S. federal government revenues are about $6 billion a year. So in 15 years, if the U.S. government spends nothing else, no infrastructure, no schools, no military, we could fund the Green New Deal and we can all take a nice, green bus to Hawaii. Why don't we work on concepts that actually make sense? Why don't we perpetuate and continue ideas that have actually proven to work? I'd love to see that happen.
You're calling us on a day. A lot of folks only know you from the cable news types of interviews and whatnot, but you've actually been writing some op-eds recently. And one of them that you wrote in The Telegraph was about, I guess, the soon-to-be former British Prime Minister, Theresa May. I'm curious if you've been following these Brexit developments, and she's set to step down. What's your response to that, just quickly?
Listen, it's sort of similar to what we've seen with all of these things, right? In this country, we did the same thing. I mean, our Brexit happened in November of 16. They voted for something. People wanted something. And, when the elite and the establishment don't get what they want, it's like they keep asking the question again until they get the answer they want. We saw that by relitigating the 2016 election for the last 2 years with all of this nonsense and all of these conspiracies. And it's still ongoing today. I think you got to let the people have what they actually want and not just sort of give them the option and make it seem like this pretend thing. So, I'm not going to delve into the issues of the policy, but what's gone on there and the way they've handled it, hasn't exactly been smooth and hasn't exactly instilled faith, in the people on either side that their voice matters. And again, you can see that in this country. We didn't like Trump, so we'll figure out a way to take him out later on. There's an insurance policy for all of this stuff. I read briefly that she's stepping down before the next thing, but unfortunately, with my day job, I haven't actually been able to keep up with it entirely today.
And another op-ed you've been writing about is big tech companies like Instagram and Facebook and Google, about how they've been censoring the conservatives. What do you think should ultimately be done with that, and where do things stand? You just had an op-ed, for example, on Real Clear Politics.
Yeah, listen, I think you have to do something about it. I mean, I'm pretty vocal on social. I have a pretty big platform. A lot of people reach out to me, from all walks of life, from all over the country, whether it's, the Second Amendment crowd, whether it's conservative groups. And they're saying, Don, what you experienced when they deleted your post and didn't give you a reason, and all of a sudden it was just it didn't meet the terms of services for something that was totally inane, commenting on, news of the day. It opened a floodgate, Kevin. I mean, I saw people from all over. Don, I tried liking a post. It was like me and my kids. It wasn't even a political thing on your page. And Facebook or Instagram, locked me out of my account for this amount of time. Or, Don, I had to refollow you six times this week for some reason. It keeps unfollowing you. Or, Don, all of a sudden I'm miraculously following some liberal account I didn't sign up for, have no interest in following, and all of a sudden it's there in my feed all the time. This stuff is real, Kevin. And I don't know, you know, everywhere it's going to be a little different. But the second I voiced an opinion about it, the literally thousands of people that came out of the, oh, my God, Don, we've experienced the same thing. We can't get our voice out. It shouldn't be happening, okay? I can't offer a service to the public and then discriminate because I don't like the way they look. I mean, try doing that in a movie theater. See what happens. You know, the notion that this is a free service, it's different. It's not. You know, there's still a very Republican sort of free market way, you know, of handling this issue without stymieing, you know, the opinions of, let's call it 50% of the country. You know, that's what big tech is doing. It only goes one way. We see that. We see them, you know, whether it's the Project Veritas stuff that catches them in the act, that where they're admitting it. You know, this is a truth. This is not a conspiracy. You can't have this much smoke, this many people basically saying it happens, it only happening one way, and pretend like this isn't an issue. To me, it appears as though it's a dry run. They realized that we were very effective using social media in 2016. Obviously, the vast, vast majority of Silicon Valley is very left-wing. You know, let's see how we can stymie it. Let's see if we can, you know, I'm not saying they're eliminating it. I'm not saying they're doing this. But, you know, if they block 10% of the outreach, like if they slow my growth on social, if they do that to my father, I mean, you know, it's amazing. And it's not one or two people. I mean, I sort of open the door because I'm willing to call out nonsense when I see it, even if it's controversial, even if it gets me some incoming right. And I take some heat for it. You know, I've been doing that for a while, and I'm willing to do it. But, you know, if they can do it to me, and if they can do it to an account like mine, imagine what they can do to some little guy that has, you know, 200-300 friends, 200-300 followers trying to do this. I mean, you see people posting just ordinary Christian, nice religious things. Facebook locked me out of my account. They said it was, you know, right. Not again. You know, not controversial things. I'm not even talking about, well, the religious side of the abortion issue or anything like that. I'm talking right. about just, you know, what would have been totally normal, God-fearing American stuff 2 years ago is now too toxic for social media. Meanwhile, you know, go put on some explicit search terms on there and see what you can find. That stuff's fine.
Donald Trump Jr. is our guest. He's joining us on the line. We're staring down the restart of a re-election campaign, every Democrat virtually running for president. Who are the candidates that you think could present the biggest political threat to President Trump's re-election?
You know, honestly, right now, I don't know that any of them can. I mean, I think, you know, you're
there's
sort of...
There's got to be one.
You're sort of dealing with, like, new socialists or, well, I mean, everyone's... Joe Biden. Joe Biden, because he's a man of the people. Joe Biden's a swamp creature. Joe Biden's been doing this for 50 years. You know, I don't see him as the new, you know, this is where we're going. And the other side is, you know, the extreme, you know, socialist left. You know, the reality is, you know, my father joked about this to some of the minority communities, you know, when he was running, which is, hey, what do you have to lose? Remember, that was a big, oh, my God, it's terrible. The reality is now, you know, voting against these policies and what they've done to this economy, you have a lot to lose. You can actually lose a lot. This is a much riskier proposition than when we were dealing with, you know, 1.8% GDP growth, the worst recovery in the history of this thing. And, you know, it's a big difference. This could be disastrous. And so, I don't see too many reasonable people. And, you know, you've seen me in Iowa and sort of outside the Beltway bubble. You know, I think you understand that I have a pretty good grasp of people in that part of the world because I actually spend real time there. I actually have real friends there. You know, guess how many times they asked me about Russia over the last 2 years?
Yeah.
You know, exactly zero.
Yeah.
You know, what they're psyched about is that they can bring on new hires, that they can bring on people to work, et cetera, et cetera.
So when you look at this, I mean, and everyone, the chatter over the last couple of years, and you know this, for yourself as well as for your sister, would you ever consider running for office, or do you think Ivanka would ever consider running for office?
I don't know. You know, I'd never rule it out, Kevin. Right now, my primary focus is, you know, making sure as an American that we can keep this going, that we can get our country back on track, that we can right, you know, the ship and get it going in a direction that makes sense again, where, you know, it's not a problem to say, hey, we're going to put our country first. You know, the whole notion of what's gone on over the last few years is absolutely nuts, and I think we're doing that, and we're pushing back, and we're not going to let the rest of the world use us as a punching bag because we're unwilling to pick those fights. You know, once we solve our problems, And, you know, while we've done a great job at whittling away at some of them, you know, there's still a lot left to be done. And I think my father's going to do that and do a great job. And if I can be helpful in that and I can be a powerful voice, for that, that's my primary focus because, you know, I'm the father of five young kids and I want to make sure that I leave this country, in a better place than where we found it. And I think we're doing that. As for the future, I never want to rule it out. I definitely enjoy the fight. I definitely like being out there and I love being able to see the impact and the difference that it makes, on these people's lives that I get to see all over the country. And like I said earlier, it's, you know, I'm not just trapped in that New York City bubble. Frankly, you know, I show up here for work and the rest of my time and all my free time is spent everywhere else. Watching that and seeing that difference is truly special. So I never want to rule it out, but I'm not saying I'm doing it either. We have a lot of time. You know, my father decided to get into politics at 68. I'm 41. I got plenty of time to figure it out.
Last question for you. Donald Trump Jr. joining us on the Bloomberg Radio telephone line. Just put this in perspective in terms of just where Friday and where Sunday and what happened with the Mueller investigation, how has that reset the Republican Party heading into 2020, and how has it reset this administration, not just from a senior level with the president himself, with members of your family and senior members of the administration, but from a staffer level as well, folks who have had to live with this as the backdrop for more than 2 years?
Well, listen, I imagine it's a huge boost for morale. I mean, and that's the reality. While this was an incredible vindication for my father, for myself, for our family, you know, more importantly, it was a vindication for all those great Americans that stuck by. You know what I'm saying? Like 93% negative coverage for a record that, you know, other than this nonsense, which is now just that nonsense, and shown to be, you know, it's pretty amazing. Don't forget, Kevin, I've done 27 hours of congressional testimony about this thing. You don't think that the 19 Hillary-supporting leftist lawyers on the Mueller team has seen all of that and would have been glad to indict me or my father if they had any opportunity to do so? They would have reveled in it. The fact that it took this long, that they dragged it out conveniently after midterms and all of these things, there's still a lot to be said for that, but I think for all of those people in the administration, for all of those people, and more importantly, for all of those just hardworking Americans that support us and continue to do that and support my father and his policies, it's been a pretty big week. For the media, it's been a disaster. The tinfoil hat brigade in Congress, Adam Schiff, it's been a disaster. For Michael Avenatti, who the media said, hey, this guy's a real viable presidential contender, because anything that hurts Trump, we're gonna back it, hook, line, and sinker. It doesn't matter. We're gonna go with that because if you're willing to say something bad about Trump, no problem. You're a contender. How'd that work out for you? I think it's been a great week, and I think it's important, and I'd like to see us get back on the right track. I'd like to see some reasonable Democrats, get in, line and say, hey, we may not agree with everything, but these are things that we can agree on. These are policies that make sense for the American people. These are policies that are going to put Americans back to work and continue the great job numbers that we've seen. I'd love to see that. I don't know that it can happen. It's sort of like the media. There have been players, and I don't mean like home team conservative media people, but there are players, I won't even mention their names because they'll get killed, that actually were reasonably objective over the last 2 years. It's a very small handful of them, okay? But they were like, and the second they did that, if they said, well, it doesn't look like Don Jr. is going to go, oh, my God, they just get ratioed to death. It's been terrible for those who've done a good job because the lunacy brigade on the other side, made it difficult for us to actually believe in those institutions again, for us to believe in the media again. And that's a problem. So I'd like to see it. I'd like to see some objectivity. I'd like to see some bipartisanship in getting things that make sense for Americans done. If we do that, I think we can really do incredible things, and I think it'd be really beneficial for the country as a whole.
All right. Donald Trump Jr., appreciate you calling in to Bloomberg Radio. That's Donald Trump Jr. weighing in on the Mueller investigation and, of course, his thoughts on big tech and social media. Conservatives are really weighing in on that as well. Our thanks to Donald Trump Jr. Breaking news as it's happening. UK Parliament votes 441 to 105 to approve the Brexit delay. I want to get to that again. The UK Parliament has voted 441 to 105 to approve the Brexit delay. Joining me in studio, they were listening to that exclusive interview with Donald Trump Jr., is Dina Bass. She is a partner at Bass Public Affairs. She's the former deputy chief of staff to Dr. Ben Carson in his role as the HUD secretary, and Christina Antello. She is the principal at Ferox Strategies. She worked as a Wall Street investment banker and wealth management advisor at major Wall Street firms, including Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan, and she served as a lead legal fellow with the Senate Democratic Steering Committee. All right, Christina, you were listening to Donald Trump Jr. I take it you agree with everything.
Yeah, I absolutely agreed with everything he said, especially the whole part about giving the American people what they wanted. And I'll just take the quick reminder that actually Hillary Clinton got the popular vote by more than 3 million votes. So maybe we aren't giving them. But also on the financial side that he talks about in the markets and kind of where we are on the policies of the Trump administration, there have been recent reports this last week that the yield curve is inverted and that it portends a potential recession is on the way, and maybe that'll happen or maybe it won't. But nonetheless, I'm not sure that Trump can claim a complete success here with his policies. As anybody who studies finance knows, that kind of the immediate financial situation of the country can follow well after a year or two after the previous president and their policies.
All right. I want to come back to this. We do have this breaking Brexit news, and joining us on the line is Bloomberg News columnist in London, Therese Raphael, because the UK Parliament has just voted 441 to 105 to approve the Brexit delay. Therese, what's going on over there, and what can you tell us?
Yeah, I mean, that vote was not the showcase vote of the evening. That simply changes the domestic law so that the Brexit day now reflects the new extended deadline of April 12th. What we're waiting for is a result on a series of indicative votes that will tell us whether there is any sort of majority in Parliament for options other than Theresa May's deal. And what's just happened a minute ago is Speaker of the House, John Bercow, suspended the House until the votes on the different Brexit models have been counted. So he had hoped to announce the results now, but they're not ready yet, we are expecting those to be announced quite soon. And then I think we'll get a better sense of whether Theresa May's deal has any hope of returning to Parliament. But it's not looking good, especially because the Democratic Unionist Party, the small Northern Irish party that props up her government, has said today definitively they will not support her deal.
And if you're just joining us, I'm Kevin Cirilli, Bloomberg News Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. Therese Raphael is Bloomberg Opinion Editor in London. UK Prime Minister Theresa May promised to resign earlier today as British Prime Minister if her Conservative Party colleagues drop their opposition to her Brexit strategy and vote to ratify her deal. In very simple, simple terms, Therese, where are we now? Because we just had this development in the UK Parliament. But what is the next step, and what does it precisely mean over the next 3 hours that we should be watching for?
Well, for the next 3 hours, we're waiting for results on a series of votes that MPs are taking. May has promised to step down if her deal gets passed by Parliament. Now, they've rejected it already twice, and the Speaker of the House has said she can't bring it back unless it's changed substantially. So it's not even clear she can bring it back to the House. And finally, it's not clear, even if she brings it back to the House, even though she's got hardline conservatives who's opposed her deal, now on her side. It's still not clear she has the math, the numbers to pass that deal. So I think if we were to say, you know, what does all of this mean? I think we're heading toward perhaps a softer Brexit than what her deal signifies. That means a Brexit with closer ties to the European Union than the one that many Conservatives wanted and the one that Theresa May has negotiated. But at this point, it's really too early to say
I mean, this is truly remarkable, folks. I mean, if you follow any type of government politics internationally, this is a dramatic gamble. She is essentially saying, UK Prime Minister Theresa May is saying, if you get on board with my deal, I will step down. And what is unknown is whether or not they will agree, lawmakers in the UK will agree with that. She has spent 2 years negotiating this Brexit deal, and it's been rejected twice, and not by a slim majority, but by a huge majority in Parliament. So if she's able to succeed at this, she'll no doubt have to go out. We have about 2 minutes left, but your thoughts on this, Therese Raphael, before we have to go to break, Bloomberg opinion editor in London.
Yeah, I mean, she's a consummate political survivor. Remember, she called the 2017 general election. The Tories lost their majority in Parliament. A lot of people called for her to step down then. And she said, look, I'll leave when you want me to, but I'd like to continue doing the work of the country. And she was kept on. There was a challenge to her leadership in December, and she survived that. So, you know, I wouldn't count her out even now, or, you know, say definitively that her deal is dead. I think it's a very, very hard road for her to get it passed, given where the parliamentary numbers are, and given that many MPs now think that there are alternatives.
All right. I want to thank Therese Raphael, Bloomberg opinion editor in London. You've been listening to the breaking news that has gone on here. As we have been speaking, the pound has fallen after the parliament rejected May over her Brexit deal. We've also just heard earlier in the program from Donald Trump Jr. Coming up, we have an all-star panel to react to these breaking news and, of course, to the ongoing trade story that we are also following as Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer are negotiating for the rest of the week in Beijing with the Chinese. I am Kevin Cirilli. Remember, you can download the sound on podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. Check us out at radio.com and iHeartRadio. I'm Kevin Cirilli. This is Bloomberg.
This is Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2 Baltimore.
A busy day here in Washington, D.C. We're following multiple fronts as Theresa May has promised to resign as British Prime Minister if her Conservative Party colleagues drop their opposition to her Brexit strategy and vote to ratify her deal. That's got some major international market implications. Meanwhile, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer are over in China or en route to negotiate the U.S.-China trade deal. Joining me in studio, Dina Bass, partner at Bass Public Affairs. She's former Deputy Chief of Staff to HUD Secretary Ben Carson. Christina Antello is principal at Ferox Strategies. She's worked at J.P. Morgan and Goldman and served as a legal fellow with the Senate Democratic Steering Committee. All right, so Christina, we were talking earlier about what we heard from Don Jr. About the economic forecast. Dina, you as well were listening to that. I want to thank you both for being so patient during this breaking news with Brexit. But I wanted to let you finish in terms of where you think things stand economically here in the U.S. as we've got so many different uncertain factors with trade as well as a host of other different things on the economic forecast.
Sure, thank you. I was making the point earlier that earlier this week we had seen the inverted yield curve, and that might portend that there is a recession possibly on the way. And with that, I would kind of call into, like, you know, coming out of the last administration, a lot of their policies might have led to all of these glorious accolades that Mr. Trump was trying to take advantage of for his father. But what I would argue is that now we're starting to see in this tax season kind of the ramifications that happened with their quote-unquote tax reform and the amount of debt that our economies had to take on because of that. And I think that that's going to continue to have a negative impact on our economy going forward. So I think that's going to really play out into 2020.
You know, I would have to disagree with Christina, my colleague and friend, on these issues. First of all, she does have a great deal of experience on Wall Street, and you know, people like me live on Main Street, and in that space, you know, I look at the increase in my health care under Obamacare. I look at the at things. I do look at the tax relief that this president has ushered in, and so while these things may not be a big deal to Wall Street, they are certainly a big deal to people like me on Main Street. And so while I don't think that the president can take credit for every single thing that that has happened with the economy, I certainly believe that his tax relief, I believe that looking at reforming, if not completely repealing Obamacare, are things that the American people actually do want. So
I think I would disagree that the American people want it. They've tried to repeal it now in Congress so many times, and they continue to fail over and over again.
I don't think that there's been a fire in the belly in Congress to actually do that. I think that Americans actually do feel the pain of Obamacare, and I think that what they want is health care access. And what we're seeing now, as we're, you know, we have a slate of about 20-25 Democrats vying for their party's nomination, we're looking at things like complete government takeover of healthcare. So that is not what Americans want. I think Americans want something right in between, but definitely not a complete government takeover.
Dina Bass is partner at Bass Public Affairs, former deputy chief of staff to HUD Secretary Dr. Ben Carson. Christina Antello is principal at Ferox Strategy. She's worked at Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and served as a legal fellow with the Senate Democratic Steering Committee. Coming up, we're going to talk much more about healthcare policy. President Trump saying that healthcare is the debate he wants to have with the American people heading into the 2020 reelect. We're going to talk much more about the ins and outs of that. I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2 Baltimore.
Happy Hump Day, folks. If you are going to be at the Export-Import Bank Annual Conference tomorrow in Washington, D.C., I will be there in the afternoon moderating the congressional panel. It's very timely, given that U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer is headed to China with Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin to negotiate the U.S.-China trade deals. And then Liu Hua is going to be here. He's the Chinese vice premier in Washington, D.C. on April 3rd. So the trade story continuing. Meanwhile, there's also all of the chatter in Washington, D.C. as where the debate goes now that the Mueller report, a story has seemingly ended. Democrats saying that they want that immediate release of the Mueller report, but it's unclear if they're going to be able to have any mechanism to get it. And Republicans saying, sure, release it. President Trump, for his part, he's headed to Michigan tomorrow night, where he will be giving a campaign-style rally. It's been a busy, busy day for us here on the Sound On team, and many thanks to our team behind the scenes. We had Donald Trump Jr. on earlier, following right after that in the middle of Brexit breaking news. Theresa May has promised to resign as British Prime Minister if her Conservative Party colleagues drop their opposition to her Brexit strategy and vote to ratify her deal. Meanwhile, we're getting breaking news now that from the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler, he is a Democrat from New York, and he's saying that Attorney General William Barr will not meet the April 2nd deadline that was set for the Mueller report. So the latest twist in the Mueller saga. And joining us to help sort through all of this, Dina Bass, partner at Bass Public Affairs. She's former deputy chief of staff to HUD Secretary Dr. Ben Carson. Christina Antello is a principal at Ferox Strategies. She's worked as a Wall Street investment banker and wealth management advisor at firms including Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan, and served as a legal fellow with the Senate Democratic Steering Committee. I want to thank both of them for both of your first time on the program. Dina, where do you go in terms of where do Republicans go in terms of what debate they should be having as the Mueller investigation wraps up?
You know, I am ready for the health care debate. I'm ready for the health care debate because I think that it needs to be settled. I love listening to Democrats talk about government takeover of health care. That's the last thing that they need to do. What they probably should try to do is hang on to Mueller as long as they can. But as long as they talk about taking away private health insurance, as long as they talk about a $32 trillion bill for the American people to have a government takeover of health care, then I think that Republicans continue to win.
But Dina, respectfully, there are parts of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare that are popular.
That work, and I think that Republicans recognize that. There are some things like, you know, remaining on your parents' health insurance until you're 26. I personally think as a 26-year-old, you need to be kind of managing on your own, but America loves it. So if you want to be a 26-year-old still hanging out on your parents' health care, Republicans see that as an advantage, and they want to keep that. Pre-existing conditions, those things. There are some things that are working and that this administration has made work even better.
Christina's shaking her head.
I'm gonna agree with my colleague on a couple of things, that I do think that I'm ready for the health care debate as well. I would argue that the health care debate is why Democrats retook the House. Thank you very much. We appreciate all the chairmanships that came with that. And what I will say is that I think going forward, we continue to see that in the Trump administration. The way I see it, the way it comes across to me is, if you have, great, because you're going to get more. But if you have not, then we're going to take it away. I mean, look at the thousands of people that are being kicked off of Medicare and Medicaid because of the work requirements that the Trump administration is leveling on the state level and approving as waivers on the Obamacare and other public programs.
Christina Antello is a principal at Fairdox Strategy. She's worked at Goldman, at J.P. Morgan. She was a legal fellow with the Senate Democratic Steering Committee. Dina Bass is a partner at Bass Public Affairs, former deputy chief of staff to HUD Secretary Dr. Ben Carson. We're talking about the health care debate, but as I was listening to both of you, I was scratching my head and wondering, so where are the details of a Republican health care plan?
Yeah,
I'd
like to see those,
well,
too.
Well, where are the details to the Green New Deal? I mean, where are the details, truly? I'm not even trying to – because I was struck by this, Dina. I know you want to jump in here. But, I mean, President Trump was on Capitol Hill yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, I was up there, and I was struck at all of the staffers that I was watching scratching their heads in the Republican Party and saying, wait, what? We're going to talk health care? Where's the rollout? Where's the unveil of this?
You know, I think that I personally believe that that we definitely need more details. But what the question is for me, how do you pay for what the Democrats want? So that's the debate I want to have. There are some things about Obamacare that I think we need to fix. So I'm not in the space of tearing it all down right now. Personally, my health care certainly increased under Obamacare. I thought I could keep doctors that I couldn't keep. All those things, you know, were troubling to me as well. But the debate that I want to have, the question that I want every Democrat who's running for president right now to answer is, how are we going to pay for a government takeover of health care? And I also want to understand, how do we expect the government to do a better job? The government, when the government takes over anything, we get clunky red tape. It's never as good as when private industry takes it over. I will recognize and I will concede to my friend Christina that, yes, we do need to have oversight. We do need to make sure that people do have access. We want to expand, but we do not want to have the government take it over. That's what I'm trying to figure out. What is the answer?
But see, what's interesting here is that I'm looking at the healthcare debate, Christina, that Republicans are about to have, and I'm having flashbacks to immigration and the debate that happened in the Republican Party when you have Ann Coulter saying it was not build some of a wall, it was build a wall. It was not repeal parts of Obamacare, it was repeal Obamacare.
Which they're about to do in a court case.
But
now,
let
right?
me, which they're,
but
which
if,
the court
I, if the question is to repeal Obamacare or to have the government take over health care, and even if the question is to repeal Obamacare and not have a plan and have the government take over health care, I would rather repeal Obamacare without a plan than to have the government take it over. Because when the government takes over anything, it is disaster.
All right, Christina, what's going on with the Green New Deal? Because I've interviewed folks in every faction of the Democratic Party on this, and I'm still hard-pressed to find details of what exactly, precisely it means.
I'm going to confess to both of you that I'm not the right Democrat to go off and defend Medicare for All or the Green New Deal completely. The way I view the Green New Deal personally is, you know what? Climate change is a problem. We do believe it's man-made. We do need some solutions, and I'm going to view the Green New Deal as an RFP. a request for proposals. So everybody with your ideas, put them all on the table and let's start researching them. Let's start figuring it out. Let's hash it out and debate it and come up with the specific details. And because I don't think that we can go all the way to the extreme as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez saying, like, oh, let's all become vegan so we don't need as many cows. And so that way there will be less, you know,
I have gas nothing against vegans for the record.
I don't either, but I'm just saying.
Sounds like you do, Christina.
No, no.
Gotta
no,
be
no.
honest.
Bacon makes
I'm
less
just saying,
better.
I'm from Texas and I love my big steaks, so I'm not giving that up. It's just not going to happen.
Are you a Cowboys fan?
I am.
Ugh, I could see it. I'm a diehard Philadelphia Eagles. The second she said, Dina, that she was from Dallas, I said, she's got to be a Cowboys fan. All right, so you heard this from Don Jr., Christina, or earlier on in the show. He referred to the former Vice President, Joe Biden, who everyone wants to know, when is he getting in the race? Is he getting in the race? Is he going to do it? Is he not going to do it? He referred to him as a quote-unquote swamp creature, end quote. Should the former Vice President throw his hat into the crowded Democratic primary race, do you think, obviously Republicans are going to criticize the left, but do you think the other folks are going to try to define him as a swamp creature?
You know, he certainly has a long track record here in Washington that he will be called to account for on numerous fronts. And that is fair and that is legitimate and he should do that. Do I think he should enter? Absolutely he should, because I think he's got a strong following. And he brings a lot to the table in terms of the debate. And whoever the candidate is, whether it's him or anyone else, he will make them a stronger candidate by virtue of making them go through the paces of that kind of debate.
You know, I will admit that Uncle Joe is my, as a Republican, he is the candidate that I fear most.
Really? Why?
Absolutely. I think first of all, he has weathered the storms, and he understands that President Trump counterpunches, and so he is ready to go in swinging. And I think that the only person that will be able, if anyone can defeat President Trump, and I don't think that he will be able to be defeated, but if anyone can, it's going to be someone who's going to be willing to go in punching. I think that Joe Biden is willing to do that.
And I also think, I mean, from my side of the aisle, I haven't picked my candidate just yet, but I do think that some of the folks that are more progressive, that's going to be a tougher sell, right? I mean, we lost the last election. Democrats lost the last election because we didn't talk to the folks in the middle of the country, the Main Streeters, and they wanted to know that you understood them, and I'm not sure that our super progressives on the coasts are going to be able to do that.
Do you think President Trump is emboldened in a political lens now that this Mueller issue has been in many ways
absolutely
decided? Dina says this, but do you?
I do think that. But you know what? I don't think he got any smarter, because 3 days later he took on health care and he wasn't ready to go. And so, you know, he's emboldened, yes, but he's always been emboldened. But what I would be more fearful of as a Democrat is if he all of a sudden became strategic.
And all right, well, we're going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time. My special, special, sincere gratitude to Dina Bass, first time on the program. She's a partner at Bass Public Affairs. She's former Deputy Chief of Staff to HUD Secretary Ben Carson. And Christina Antello, principal at Fairox Strategies, a Dallas Cowboys fan. Can't say that I don't have all the sides on. And she's worked at Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and served as a legal fellow with the Senate Democratic Steering Committee. That's it for me. Thanks for listening. I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.